brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Soft Rep Radio, on time, on target. This show is brought to you by Crate Club, a club for men, by men, of gear handpicked by Special Operations military veterans. Visit crateclub.us for an exclusive promotion for our listeners of 20% off any gearbox of your choice. This is the biggest discount we've ever made available, and we don't know how long we can keep this promotion live. So go to crateclub.us, use the coupon code SOFTREP, and get 20% off any gearbox. That's crateclub.us, coupon code SOFTREP for 20% off any gearbox. Sign up now. And on this show, we have Jose Tablada, a 13-year veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps and a Force Reconnaissance Marine. The guy's background is pretty insane, being a scout sniper and a whole lot of other stuff, and I'm excited to talk to him. But before we do, it's so funny, man. CJ Ramon is like the number one fan of this show. And like when we did the Q&A show, he sent a bunch of questions and then we had him on and then he's still sending questions. But I thought this was a good one because it seems like everybody is very interested in this Eddie Gallagher case. Every time it's discussed on the show, we get a lot of feedback, sometimes negative, sometimes positive, but it definitely evokes a reaction from people. So he actually messaged me this. He wrote, "Ian, I can't direct message Jack, but I wanted to ask the both of you your opinions on the Eddie Gallagher case. I'm not arguing for his innocence. I haven't seen all the information on it. But what's expected of our special operations teams and the ROEs they operate by? I believe it puts them under unreasonable duress and creates an environment in which the rules of engagement and even human decency are guaranteed to be compromised. I understand that the law is the law and the rules are the rules, but there are extreme mitigating circumstances in cases like these. How much can we expect from a small group of people tasked with the safety of the free world? Being considered a professional does not exempt them from the same mental breakdowns that are common to all human beings exposed to and involved in situations of extreme violence. I don't believe operators can be judged in the same way the average citizen is. No one should be given a pass, but when judging the men and women who do the jobs only the elite can do, what they've seen and done before must be taken into consideration also in fairness to them." So,
There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
I actually disagree quite profoundly. I don't think that special operators should be judged in any different way. I don't think that just because you go through selection that like you have a license to kill. Or, you know, like I can go out and just like curb stomp some old lady and like that's okay because I went through some selection course. It's not. If anything, our standards should be higher. And, you know, I've been asked about this and I've weighed in on it and I've tried to be fair about it because I don't have the facts of the case. And a lot of people are out there playing barracks lawyer right now thinking they know what they're talking about, making these like very strong proclamations, either of innocence or guilt, neither of which, you know, I don't think any of us, unless you're somehow involved in the court case or a direct witness, I mean, you just don't have that information. What the allegation is that Eddie Gallagher murdered a prisoner who was brought into their camp with a knife.
If I remember correctly, you said a teenager, right?
Yeah. So there is that is not part of our training to execute prisoners. That is clearly a war crime. I don't understand what the mitigating circumstance would be. Like, is it okay because he's a SEAL? Is it okay because, you know, the horrors our soldiers face, that makes it okay? I mean, I don't really understand some of the emotional appeals that get made in this circumstance. Now, I understand things, you know, what we would say in combat, like shit happens. Like, you know, maybe a Navy SEAL kicks in a door, goes into a room, you think there's a terrorist in there, and you open fire on somebody thinking they have a gun, and it turns out it's a fucking kid. I mean, shit like that happens, and it's horrible. But, of course, we understand how that could happen, and the law does account for that. I mean, it's not like, holy shit, we're throwing you in the slammer for murder. I mean, that's not how it works. So, I mean, I think there are nuances in the military justice system, as well as our civilian legal system. But I mean, I don't think that it's just like, you know, you wear a special forces tab or you wear a tan beret and that just means it's okay. Like it's okay to just murder people and we're okay with that as a society. You know, I disagree with that.
Yeah. There's been a lot of different opinion on this and I look forward to hearing more because, as you said, we don't know all the facts yet.
Yeah, I saw somebody commenting on one of the articles that one of our writers wrote about the case, and he's like, "You train lions to do lion shit. What do you expect?" It's like, no, dude. Actually, we do not train our soldiers to execute prisoners. That does not happen. We train them to kill and fight the enemy in combat. There is nowhere that, you know, we train soldiers to execute people or fucking cut people's throats with knives. And maybe and see, there's also two separate arguments happening because there's people are simultaneously claiming he's innocent, it never happened, but they're also claiming, yeah, it did happen, but it's okay. So it's like, well, make up your mind here, which is it? But I mean, we'll see what happens with the case. I mean, I hope all of the facts come out, you know, and maybe it did not happen. Maybe it didn't happen the way it's been alleged. And, you know, that would actually be a big, you know, relief for me, you know, and obviously for his family, for Eddie Gallagher's family. But I don't want to believe that our soldiers do this kind of shit. I don't want them to do this kind of stuff. So, I mean, if the allegations are false, I mean, I'd be very, very happy to hear that.
Yeah. Well, we have, Jose Tablada standing by. Before we get to him, I, of course, want to let you guys know about what we have going on here at Hurricane Group. As always, as I mentioned before, be sure to check out Crate Club. The 20% promotion we have going on is the biggest discount we've ever made available, and we don't know how long we can keep that promotion live, so get on it right now. That's crateclub.us. Coupon code SOFREP for 20% off any of the gearboxes there. Which we have three different, the Dash 1 crate, the Pro crate, and the Premium crate. So coupon code SOFREP for 20% off any gearbox. Sign up today. Also, as a reminder for those listening, now is the time to sign up for the Spec Ops channel. That's our channel that offers the most exclusive shows, documentaries, and interviews covering the most exciting military content today. The Spec Ops channel premiere show Training Cell follows former Special Operations Forces as they participate in the most advanced training in the country. Everything from shooting schools, defensive driving, jungle and winter warfare, climbing, and much more. Again, you can watch this content by subscribing to the Spec Ops channel at specopschannel.com and take advantage of a membership for only $4.99 a month. That's specopschannel.com. Sign up today. Last, if you're not already signed up at the News Rep, you've got to get on board. Expert reporting and actionable intelligence from your favorite writers you've heard on here, like Jack, and the many guest writers who pop up as well. Alex Hollings, of course. Unlimited access to News Rep on any device. Unlimited access to the app. Join the War Room community. You'll get invitations to our exclusive events, and it's all ad-free for members. We have a trial offer up right now where you can get 4 weeks for only $1.99. Sign up now at thenewsrep.com. That's thenewsrep.com. And as I've been mentioning every show, we have our own SOFREP Radio app that you can download for free if you go to the iPhone store or on your Android. And our homepage with the full archive of interviews is SOFREPRadio.com, where you can see our full archives of shows. And as always, keep up with us at SOFREP Radio. With that, let's get over to Marine Recon veteran Jose Tablada. So joining us for the first time on the podcast is Jose Pep Tablada, 13-year veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps as a Force Reconnaissance Marine, serving as both a team leader and platoon sergeant, retired from active duty service for medical reasons in 2005 and is now the Assistant Chief of Staff for Operations and International Engagement with the Marine Corps Forces Pacific, as well as a board member with the Marine Reconnaissance Foundation. I mean, that's really the tip of the iceberg, because looking through your bio, you've served as a Marine Scout Sniper. You've done a whole lot of things, and we're excited to get into your background. And thanks for coming on.
Hey, good morning, guys, and thank you very much for having me and giving me the opportunity to represent the Marine Recon Foundation today.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I know the foundation does some really important work, but, you know, I wanted to ask you the first question, kind of the thing I like to ask everybody when they come on here is, why did, in your case, why did you join the Marine Corps? How and why did you hear that call?
Well, so honestly, at a very young age, you know, my family had a level of service. My father was a United States Marine. And he was kind of the what I would look at as the American dream. He didn't have a high school education. In fact, back in those days, you know, if you got into trouble, which you did, you know, you were either offered a stint in the lockup or join the Marine Corps. And my father made a wise choice, joined the Marine Corps, and came out of the Marine Corps after 8 years of service. From there, because of what he learned, he gained from Marine Corps service and service to our country, an incredible story. I mean, he came back here to Hawaii, and he, and my mother, started a very large, business, that was instrumental in the construction of most of the large buildings, in downtown Honolulu. So again, this is a person that did not have a formal education. His education was the Marine Corps, and that gave him the tools, you know, to become a very successful businessman here in the state of Hawaii. Since that time, you know, my father had kind of told me when I was young, hey, you're gonna join the Marine Corps, you're gonna go to college, and then maybe you'll come and work for the family business. So that was kind of baseline with my dad. With my mom, you know, I'm a first generation American. My mother is actually a Spanish citizen. And she came here on a green card and married my father in the, maybe the mid-60s, early 70s. And the takeaway I got from my mom, really, never actually becoming an American citizen, I was always struck at how patriotic she was. And she used to tell me and our family, you know, I came from Spain during the Franco Civil War, basically escaped from that and came to the United States of America as a teenager. You know, from that became a very successful businesswoman with my dad, as I described earlier. And, you know, my mom, she passed away 3 years ago, but she was always an inspiration to me because, you know, we would be like at a Blue Angels air show. That's just an example. And we're watching the Jets, and I would see my mom crying,
wow.
As a young kid, I didn't understand why. Right. And, you know, as I became older, I acutely realized how lucky that I and we are to be American citizens and live in the greatest nation on earth. So I think those two kind of things, drew me initially into I want to serve, I want to do something. I was an avid reader when I was a young teenager, so I used to read about the Marine Corps, and then for reconnaissance, interestingly enough, I came upon an article in the local newspaper. At that time, Alpha Company 3rd Reconnaissance Battalion was here on Oahu in Hawaii, and the article was about a local boy from here, from Kailua, my hometown, who was an Eagle Scout. I knew him and his brother, who was a reconnaissance Marine, and kind of the things that they did. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. What is this? You know, I'm going to be a Marine, but what is this all about? And there are some other formative things. You know, there's a helicopter crash out here in Kailua off of Lanikai. You know, some of our Marines perished. And the both the reconnaissance Marines as well as the SEAL detachment were out at the beach every day with their, I think back then it was probably IBS boats, not F-470 Zodiacs. And they would go out, you know, motor out there and put divers in the water to try to recover bodies. And I used to ride my bike down there every day and watch watch those guys go out and do that. There are other things since then, but those were kind of formative things that, that led me to say, you know, probably when I was 11 years old, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to join the Marine Corps and I want to become a reconnaissance Marine.
That's really cool to hear, you know, because it reminds me of, you know, my own childhood as well and wanting to, you know, go into the Army in my case. But it's really cool to hear, you know, hear your story and, you know, people who realize at a very young age what they want to be and then they go and do it.
Yeah. Follow through is an important component in that, right?
So, yes. Yeah. Especially, you know, to be a reconnaissance Marine or anything, you know, a Ranger or a Green Beret or a SEAL or whatever. I mean, the commitment has to be there or it's just not going to happen. So then you entered into the Marine Corps and I take it you went into Marine Infantry before going recon.
Yeah. So I was kind of lucky when, or maybe unlucky, as I look at it. Is there was an ability at the time that I came to the Marine Corps to kind of, there wasn't a really a formalized pipeline, but there was a movement to kind of get young Marines, you know, who were quality, you know, through the process that back then we'd call RIP, indoc RIP, and then you would go through the reconnaissance course at Coronado at the time, the entirety of it was there. And then you would go straight to your insert schools, you know, jump, dive, seer. And then from there, you would, you know, build off of that, you know, sniper, breacher, this, that, the other. So I was pretty lucky in the sense that although I did go through infantry training school, that I almost immediately got into the pipeline. And so, you know, back then it was kind of a rarity, but as a Lance Corporal, I was what we refer to in the Force Recon community as dual cool as a Lance Corporal.
Wow!
So as an E3, I was already, you know, kind of through the pipeline. So
you know, just for listeners, dual cool, that airborne and dive qualified, right?
Yeah, that is correct. Yes. Yep. So back in the day, you know, some of our elders, you know, I mean, there are legendary stories about guys would be like, hey, there's one quota and three of you. So go out in the parking lot, you know, do a little fisticuffs and figure out who's going to what, right? So, you know, so, I mean, again, I was very, very fortunate to go all the way to the pipeline. And that also included military free fall Halo school out at Bragg and Yuma, Arizona. So by, I want to say 1996, I had been through that entire pipeline. Again, rarity as a young E3 in the Marine Corps, and I was very fortunate. So that's kind of how I started.
What was it like being in a recon battalion at that time in the Marines? I mean, the Marine Corps was doing some stuff in the 90s. Some people think, you know, the military is doing nothing, but I mean, there was some stuff popping off here and there.
Yeah, so what I would say is back then, during this time in the mid 90s, there were standalone force reconnaissance companies versus what today Recon Battalion has a force recon company inside of it. So I would say first that you know, the Marines that I came in contact with through the pipeline, to include instructors as well as when I got to my platoon. It was humbling because when I was a youngster, you know, I boxed, I wrestled, I was in good shape. You know, I thought I was pretty smart. You know, so I thought, yeah, I'm pretty tough guy. And then you get around, you know, Marines and reconnaissance corpsmen, you know, who've been there and done that. And there are a couple of things that struck me immediately. One was, you know, you thought you were something pretty cool. And then now you're average, if that, when you're amongst these guys. And that was humbling, but that really caused me to, you know, to want to excel every single day because, you know, I wanted to be a valued member of the community, my platoon and my team. So I think that was kind of a humbling experience. But the other thing I learned very quickly was, you know, as a youngster, and you understand, you guys understand this, you know, before you had gone through your selection and assessment, before you had received the accolades of achieving what you did, whether it's Special Forces, Naval Special Warfare, Marine Force Reconnaissance. Everyone thinks about, the cool things. Ooh, am I going to go to this school? Am I going to go to that school? And, when you get there, when everyone's already been there and done that, nobody cares about that.
Right.
No one cares what school you went to, how many jumps you got, are you a sniper? Are you this or that? Because, the majority guys have done all of those things. So it really truly is about your individual reputation as a teammate, what you bring to the table. I think those two things are great factors. You're right. We had the Marines doing things that a lot, it's kind of sad that the reconnaissance community, the reconnaissance community is a very quiet community. So even myself coming on this radio station I have a little trepidation because, our forefathers are very much, we don't talk about, the job we do. We don't talk about the things we do. And I truly respect that. But, if you understand reconnaissance history and you know what the force reconnaissance community has done through history, it is fascinating and it is incredible. I mean, what a deep history. I mean, just as an example, we had Marines in Somalia prior to, the famous Black Hawk Down battle. From Second Force Recon Company doing things, and I'll just leave it there, that were real world in line with the same type of mission sets. That's a single example of, in the 90s, the kind of things that were happening. We had Marines down south with our Army Special Forces brothers doing things in Southcom, again, which I want to expand here. So there were absolutely things going on. And I would say today's young reconnaissance Marines, I think we all should do a better job of passing that lineage and history on mm-hmm. because it is amazing. But I will tell you that a lot of people do not know that fascinating, piece of American Marine Corps and reconnaissance history.
I absolutely agree. I constantly learn so much. I'd like to think of myself fairly well read. And, this is going to be episode we're close to episode 450 of this podcast.
I think we're at 445, I believe.
But I'm constantly learning things from when we have, guys from the special operations community come on here and even things that happen in my own unit. what? That really happened? Those lessons on to the next generation are really important. And I totally respect, the trepidation you have about, I know it's a closed culture, the recon culture, and you guys have to decide, what parts of it do you share with the public and which parts are just for you guys, which is understandable. But at the same time, I really believe that some of these stories need to be shared and we do need to pass some of these things on. I'm looking here, another book that just landed in our office, A Life of Blood and Danger by Daniel Hill. And this guy had way back, it looks like in the 50s and 60s, he had quite a career. And this book is probably 500 pages. So I do thank you for, coming on here and educating us a little bit. And I guess that would be my next question then is, could you tell us a little bit about what a recon Marine does and get in also to the differences between recon and force recon, because I think some of our listeners will be really interested in that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first, if I could go back to the coming on the radio station. So I want to be clear that, the purpose today for me coming on, again, thank you guys, is really in the end of this is to talk about the Marine Reconnaissance Foundation and what we're doing for our community. Whether it's traumatically injured, whether it is our Gold Star families, or whether it's the active duty recon Marine or SARC, Special Amphibious Reconnaissance Corpsman and their family today. So, we have to make a decision at the foundation that if we are going to garner any support, we have to tell some of the story. We have There's no way without exposure are we going to be able to do things. And I know we'll get to this a little later, but as an example, I think you guys are aware that we are flying six Gold Star families out to Hawaii for an all-expense-paid trip in less than a month. I mean, you know, to make that all-inclusive, all-expense paid, you know, on a $30 million estate with their own private chef and own private helicopters and all the great things we want to do, that does not happen unless we're talking about it.
Right.
And we're seeking support. So I'll stop there. I know we're going to kind of get to that. So back to your question about reconnaissance Marines. So first, it's important to understand that the core of the United States Marine Corps is the Marine Corps Infantry. And the Marine Air Ground Task Force that's built around, you know, that battalion landing team and on up is really support. You know, whether we're talking about F-35 fifth generation aircraft, whether we're talking about Cobra attack helicopters, reconnaissance Marines, you know, we at the fundamental core of our doctrine, the Marine Air Ground Task Force supports the Marine Infantry. So that's an important note here. So reconnaissance Marines in the what was formerly referred to as Division Recon, their role largely would be to support the Marine Division. Again, so the Marine Division is the infantry, and there are four Marine Divisions. And their job would be to basically conduct a ground and amphibious reconnaissance in support of that Marine Division. You know, is it a landing? Is it an air assault? Is it a route clearing, et cetera? Back in the older days, the Force Reconnaissance Company were kind of the more senior folks. I mean, back in the 90s, if you were a recon battalion Marine and you wanted to go to, say, First Force Recon Company, although you're basically trained reconnaissance Marine, you could be jump and dive, ranger, seer, this, that, the other, you would still have to take the force reconnaissance indoc. So you would take another selection to move up to force reconnaissance. The grade shaping at that time was more senior. So you would look at Division Recon as the, you know, Lance Corporal, Corporal Sergeant, and maybe a platoon sergeant as a staff sergeant. A platoon commander probably as a first lieutenant. Where Force Recon Company, you know, took the more mature, experienced Marines who had the excellent baseline. And by the way, I got to add that Marines that came from Recon Battalion are some of the best, you know, special operators that have gone to National Mission Force, have gone all over the place. But in the Recon community, that's kind of the way things work. You know, you would indoc, you'd go to Force Recon Company. And in my time, platoons were pretty senior. I mean, when we were in Iraq, we had platoons that had, you know, a senior captain or a junior major as a platoon commander. We had platoon sergeants that were very senior E7 gunnery sergeants or even E8 master sergeants. And most of the team leaders were either senior staff sergeants or gunners. So when you look at that context, you realize, you know, simply
stacked
from experience and years on the job, that you have a lot of seniority. And it was fascinating, and I'll use Iraq as an example, is when, you know, force reconnaissance would go, and although we are technically not part of Special Operations Command, I will tell you that during, you know, most of my time in Iraq, we were with 5th Group, SEAL Team 3, other government agencies, doing basically the, you know, the same mission in different, you know, different battle space. So, and I realized as a team leader, as a staff sergeant, like, wow, man, we bring a pretty senior group here. The other guys that I noticed that were senior in rank would be the Army Special Forces guys. Obviously those guys are, you know, I have tremendous respect for the knowledge base that those guys have, but you know, they're all E6 and higher. Where there were other units that were, you know, pretty junior in rank. Now, not that rank is all things, but I'm trying to demonstrate that years of service and years of doing that type of work matters,
yeah.
Especially when it's going to be something very sensitive, you know, or something that's going to take a lot of maturity to go and do. So because of that, we were positioned to do some pretty neat things, you know, with other units and other government agencies. And those experiences, you know, have carried me to where I am today.
And I also just wanted to take a second to point out, I mean, the difference between recon and force recon is force recon had the direct action mission, correct?
That is correct. However, there were times in reconnaissance history when either Force Recon had been disbanded in the 80s, where the recon battalion was what was referred to as a DRP, a deep reconnaissance platoon. So those guys, as a platoon, not a company, kind of acted as the Force Recon element. And in those kind of transitional years, when the commandant was General Al Gray, when we kind of started the Marine Expeditionary Unit Special Operations Capable, the MUSOC program, there was kind of a lot of overlap where there were senior recon Marines that were in recon battalion, maybe DRP, and they took on, what we would refer to back then as the black side type mission, in extremis hostage rescue, limited scale direct action. And during those formative years, our units got to do, again, a little more recon history. I mean, they trained with LAPD SWAT, which is probably the premier law enforcement SWAT team out there. They trained with the National FBI HRT. They trained with some elements of the National Mission Force. In specific JTFs, which I won't go to. So it's interesting how things kind of evolved in the 80s, early 90s through that progression. And then now, today, what we have really, Marine Special Operations Command, now referred to as the three Raider battalions, were established, the beginnings of our direct connection to SOCOM, other than individual billets and individual Marines serving, National Mission Force and other things, was really our what is referred to as MC SOCOM Detachment 1, DET 1.
Right.
Under Colonel Coates. Bob Coates. So that organization was kind of our first step, directed by Secretary Rumsfeld to quote unquote get the Marine Corps into SOCOM. There's a deliberate decision earlier on. I talked about General Al Gray, our commandant, that he decided at that time there was consideration of putting Force Recon under SOCOM, and he decided against it in order to retain the capabilities of Force Reconnaissance in support of the Marine Air Ground Task Force. So, DET-1 went out the door, the way the unit was organized fascinated. Really some insightful process into developing the unit. A lot of those Marines are my teammates, my peers, my close friends still today. Basically Colonel Coates and the team approached it as a MAGTF, right? A Marine Air Ground Task Force. Now, the thing that never got off the ground, it never finalized, was the A in the MAGTF. There was no dedicated aviation combat element for DET-1, which is a shame, but larger needs of the Marine Corps came into play about, hey, we can't just give you guys, a detachment of fixed and rotary wing. But what DET-1 did do was really look at, the core of DET-1, the shooters and the RNS element were Force Recon Marines. There's a lot of talk about, they were the most senior guys and they were hand selected and this and that. There's a little bit of truth to that, but I will tell you that, if you ask the Marines there, they're like, hey man, we were just Force Recon guys. So they made up the core element, but what made Detachment 1 really unique is the thought process in the going into not just, the shooters and reconnaissance element, but the enablers, the fires, the intel, the ability to have, military working dogs, your own armorers, on and on and on. And those support Marines, enablers, were expected to go through a selection of sorts, not only initially, but throughout the workup for their deployment. I mean, there are some stories about Colonel Coates and the team, putting them on a, short, 50, 60 ruck march at, 10,000 feet. And that's just the weekly, kind of man up type of event, So, and those support element guys were expected to do those things. They were expected to be able to come onto a target as part of the security element. So it was really fascinating the way that, DET-1, was brought together. Now, I will tell you, there was machinations in the beginning about the command relationships with the dead one go with special forces, would they go with naval special warfare? And so the ultimate decision was they did go with the SEALs. Now, that's where, in my understanding, and I was not a member of that one, where things kind of went bad because this organization had very, very rapid come together, trained up and certified in a very compressed amount of time. And, you know, the intent was to deploy them as a detachment in totality, where when they ended up going down range, really, they were kind of picked apart a little bit. Elements went here, leadership went there. But besides that, if you've ever read the unclassified or the classified after actions, which I have, the Navy SEAL 05, his last name is Divine. I don't remember his first name.
He's been on the show before, kind of like the evaluator.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying he's been on the show before. I could probably find that in the archive. But yeah, he runs that whole SEAL fit thing, I believe.
Oh, is that what he does now? I don't know the man personally, but reading the after actions that he has the senior SEAL evaluator, I mean, it's awesome and it's really telling of the quality of the United States Marine Corps, the individual Marine. And within that, the elements that made up, you know, our enablers, hugely powerful. And then, of course, my teammates, the force reconnaissance, the radio recon guys. I mean, the bottom line is the comments within all those after actions were, you know, this was the force of choice. These guys brought things that none of the other soft elements weren't organized. Were organized in a unique way that allowed them to do things. And I will tell you, although I was not in the detachment, I am very proud of that because a lot of those Marines, some of the most professional, competent people that you will ever know, they went there and just did their job. No pomp and circumstance. And then following that, when they came back after doing a fantastic job, I mean, again, incredible. You know, the thought was, okay, Det 1 would kind of in that sort of MAGCAF minus the ACE organization at some point become what MARSOC is right today. And largely that did not happen. In fact,
I mean, they got disbanded, didn't they?
Yeah, they basically were in limbo for a while after deployment. And all of this is available in the unclassified. I think there's a Marine Corps publication on it.
Yeah, no, there
so,
is.
I mean,
I've
you
seen
guys
it.
Can fact check. But they basically were kind of in a limbo, like waiting to go. And then, again, my recollection, it's been a while, is that they were basically disbanded and a organization was stood up by, you know, really standing down first and second force reconnaissance companies, you know, furl the flag and then bring out a new flag. And it says 1st Marine Special Operations Battalion, MSOB, and 2nd Marine Special Operations Battalion. So that's kind of, and there actually was a 3rd battalion that was made up of our, we tried to use what was referred to as 4th Marine Expeditionary Brigade anti-terrorism, and then they became kind of the FID, the Foreign Internal Defense. It was the Foreign Military Training Unit, FMTU. So those were not necessarily reconnaissance, force reconnaissance guys. They were guys that were trained to go train military units. So they used those organizations to basically stand up 3 Marine Special Operations battalions. So that's kind of the genesis of how that all happened. So I think an important note is I think the capabilities that the Marine Raiders have today and the job that they do and what they've accomplished is tremendous. I mean, incredible bunch of Marines. The current commander of MARSOC is a friend and a teammate. He's a force recon officer, Major General Dan Yu. But I think it's important to note that organization was stood up by disbanding force reconnaissance. I mean, that's a key point here. So there's a direct lineage there. Now, today, there is, there are 3 battalions of now Raider battalions, what they're referred to, and there are reconnaissance battalions, 2 different Marine military occupational specialties, 2 different organizations, 2 different chains of command. one working for the Marine Corps and one working for U.S. SOCOM.
And they
but
did,
it's important to understand how that happened.
They did re-stand up Force Recon as well, didn't they?
Yes. So the organization today is basically Force Reconnaissance is a company within each reconnaissance battalion. So the reason why that's different from the 90s, early 2000s, is that back in that time when I was in Force Reconnaissance, a Force Recon company was a standalone organization. So although the term company is there, it really had the table of organization equipment, much like a infantry battalion. What I mean by that is the company commander was an 05, was a lieutenant colonel. His XO was a major in 04. The OPSO was a major in 04. So the structure, the budget was not that of a company. It was that of a battalion. But, you know, the name, the nomenclature was Force Reconnaissance Company. So, you know, different ULN, different budget, you know, all of that for a Force Recon company. So distinctly different units. Force Recon, first Force Recon company, first reconnaissance battalion. Second Force Recon company, second recon battalion. Okinawa was kind of interesting where they did have a standalone Force Recon company that they referred to as, that was referred to as fifth Force Recon company. And then there was third recon battalion. And then finally in the reserves, there was fourth Force Reconnaissance Company and fourth recon battalion. So again, different units separated, where today the Force Recon companies in the active duty are inside of the reconnaissance battalion. Normally the company commander is probably a senior captain or a major. So again, they, maybe competition isn't the right word, but the Force Recon company has to use the same assets, facilities, you know, school quotas, budget that recon battalion has. So that's kind of, those are kind of the differences from then, again, 90s through, or, you know, mid 2000s and now. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, following up on that, I wanted to ask what you make of some of the recent scuttlebutt, I guess, or grumblings that are being talked about the Marine Corps actually wanting to do away with MARSOC, which seems quite short-sighted after the Marines spent a substantial amount of time building that capability.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what vantage point you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, you know, that I'm familiar with the article or the information paper you're referring to. It does it have some insight? Are there some valid points? Yeah, maybe. The truth of the matter is that, that in my personal and professional opinion, that's not going to happen. The Marine Raiders of today, you know, if you think about the genesis of them and how rapidly they came together while our nation was at war,
they cut their
and
teeth.
What they've been able to accomplish. I mean, it's incredible. It's like building an airplane while in flight. I would like to just put in the plug that a lot of that was based on the knowledge and skill sets of Force Reconnaissance. Do I believe they're going to be disbanded? Absolutely not. If you look at it from a big Marine Corps perspective, which, you know, the United States Marine Corps isn't just MARSOC, isn't just Force Recon, right? I can understand why some may think that, because the truth of the matter is that, you know, MARSOC, as well as Reconnaissance Committee, draws, you know, some of the finest Marines in the Marine Corps. MARSOC is not directly in support of the Marine Air Ground Task Force. You know, there may be command relationships downrange where, you know, Raider companies or Raider MSOTs are doing something supporting Marines, but there's no direct relation. So I can see the, you know, big green Marine Corps considering, well, there's this huge investment in time and some money. You know, people go, oh, the money's all from SOCOM. That's not entirely true. Much of it is, that is true. But, you know, a lot of the initial investment in those Marine, you know, the young Marine infantry officer, the young Marine infantry staff NCO, you know, came from the Marine Corps. I mean, we have to be clear about that. I don't think it'll happen. I think that the truth of the matter is our soft forces are, you know, truly today force multipliers. The things that a young or a small team, you know, ODA, MSOT, can go and do around the world in austere locations is just incredible. I mean, it's just it really truly has evolved so much. So from a tactical perspective, understanding what the soft forces in general, but really the Army Special Forces soldier and the Marine Raider, specifically in the realm of interacting with potential partner nations and what you guys do, FID, UW, et cetera, can't be matched. There's nowhere else in the military that does it the same way that, of course, the forefather of all of that was the Green Beret, the Special Force Soldier, and now the Marine Raider. So the big Marine Corps, our service, our commandant, our the service chiefs in general, they have a much, much broader, 20,000 foot strategic view of what they need to be doing, right? So, if you've read the current National Defense Strategy, you understand that the Department of Defense and the whole of government realizes that today, our potential peer adversaries are different. And so we need to start to look at how we're going to address those concerns. Do we want to go to war? Of course we don't want to go to war. That's ridiculous. Do we need to be prepared to go to war with other nations who have rapidly developing capabilities? Yes, we do. So, when you look at it from that perspective, what MARSOC or RECON or anything else brings is relatively minuscule, So that's why you're going to see two different sides of the camp.
Right.
But if you ask me, if you ask Pep Poblada, no, MARSOC's not going anywhere. They've proven their worth, rapidly and in an incredible fashion. And I can't see that happen. Is it impossible? No, I guess not. But do I think it's going to happen? No, I don't.
Yeah, no, I sure hope that you're right about that. I mean, I know the Marines and MARSOC in particular, they've been quite aggressive in developing some of these special operations capabilities. And it'll be interesting to see where they go in the future. But with all that said, unless you had anything else you wanted to add, I did want to ask you about the Marine Reconnaissance Foundation.
Okay, great.
So
you want me just to go, or you have specific questions?
No, I mean, go ahead. Tell us about the foundation and what you guys do.
Okay. So, first, the Marine Reconnaissance Foundation, is an organization that, has been around for, I want to say about 6 years. The current president, David Donnell, retired E-8, first sergeant, a recon communicator that served with the 1st Reconnaissance Battalion, 1st Force Recon Company, 1st Raider Battalion, at then called MSOB, and then at our schoolhouse, the Recon Training Company. He and a couple of like-minded Marines decided, hey, there needed to be an organization that was focused on supporting our teammates, the men, the mission, and the families today. Okay, so there are other organizations that are out there, and they all do great work. But in this specific case, understanding that, we're a nation at war, that's what we wanted to focus on, was trying to get at that. Now, I was not I'm not a plank holder of the MRF. I've only been on the board for a little over a year. I was asked to join. I was voted in, and I was lucky enough to become a board member. So really, for me, my personal experience with the MRF, I wanted to know what it was about, because I've been involved in some other organizations, and some of them are incredible. And some of them are more involved in just kind of getting the boys together, kind of drinking beer, hanging out. And for me, my aspiration was always, hey, our younger teammates that are serving today, because I'm retired, what can we do to help them? What can we do to help their families? Our Marines are, we have traumatically injured Marines. We have Marines with severe PTSD. We have Marines that have, emergency financial needs. Of course, like every other community, we have deaths. We've had, a few parachute deaths in the last few years, as an example. You know, those families, although there's a support structure within the Department of Defense and within the Marine Corps, you know, those their needs are not always addressed. Or sometimes it's a recent separated veteran that no longer has those support elements because he's no longer attached to the DOD, to the Marine Corps, you know, and as they're transitioning from military to civilian. So when I started to understand what the foundation has done, you know, I was like, wow, I want to be a part of that. Now, I'll be honest with you. This is just Pep's opinion. Again, going back to the tenet of Sound a Professional, I felt like, wait, why don't I know about all this great stuff that the MRF's doing? I should know it. I mean, this is my community. I should know that, you know, a Marine that was, you know, killed in a parachute accident, we helped the family by doing this, that, and the other. You know, a traumatically wounded Marine, we helped him with X. You know, a Marine's house got flooded and is severely damaged, and, you know, we worked with organizations to get people out there to physically gut the house. I mean, why didn't I know about it? So for me, one of the tenets that I put forth to the board was, hey, we need to tell the story.
Yeah.
Because young recon Marines need to know that there is an organization like the Marine Reconnaissance Foundation that's there to support them and their families. So, you know, that's kind of in a nutshell what the organization does. It's all volunteers. It's a few active duty Marines. It's mostly retired senior enlisted, although we do have a few commissioned officers, some of them that are still on active duty. Again, silent professionals. You know, this is an uncompensated job. I will tell you, for me personally, I mean, I'm at work 12 hours a day. I'm sometimes 7 days a week. It depends on what's going on in the world for my civilian job. So being on the board is really a second job. I mean, I could easily say in any day I put in between 2 and 5 hours, you know, of work in support of the foundation. But, you know, the key point here is all of us as volunteers, all of us as board members believe in the mission. You know, we believe in the reconnaissance community. And I'll tell you, I get to interact with some of the young recondos of today, and they're awesome. You know, they are really impressive what our Marines and Special Amphibious Reconnaissance Corpsmen are doing today. And so that re-energizes me, like, hey, man, I need to stay in the fight.
That's cool.
These guys at some point may need help, you know. So does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. But could you also get into a little bit specific as far as what the foundation does? Because you had mentioned some things that they're doing for the families and stuff like that. I'm sure people would like to know, you know, how the foundation gives back to, you know, these young Marines and their families.
Sure. So, you know, really, again, it's everything from emergency support, and that could be financial, or that could be, you know, in-person support. And I'll give you some examples. We had a Marine teammate that had severe PTSD. He had left service, going through a rough time. Some great Americans, some police officers, in his state had to respond to his house because of potential suicide attempt. So as the police officers got there, you know, one of the guys looking around, he's not even a Marine, but he goes, whoa, this guy, look at this, you know, and he has his, you know, our teammate has his, you know, time in service, what he's done, recon this and that. And so the police officer reaches out to the foundation and says, hey, man, I'm not a Marine. I'm not a recon guy. I know what you guys are. This guy needs help. And I'll tell you that the foundation, within probably 6 hours, coordinated, you know, a team of guys, located guys who are actually in his platoon and in his team.
Wow.
And got them on site to get positive control of him. And since then, we have helped in this specific case. Try to locate and lock on, follow on patient search. So that's an example. We lost a young Marine, Alex Romero, maybe about 14 months ago. Alex was out of 3rd Recon Battalion. We lost him in a parachute accident, double bag static line accident. Jeez. And we are rapidly able to apply funds and raise funds to support his wife, as well as support his family and some of his teammates to you know, fly places, get to the funeral, you know, that sort of stuff. So that's where, that's the kind of emergency category. Another recent example, we have a teammate that's out in the Northeast. He left Marine Corps service because of a stroke, right? So think of a, you know, a young stud, staff sergeant, medical issues. He's medically separated, you know, really bad stroke, partially paralyzed. Lives kind of in a very rural area. Has a little toddler, has a baby literally on the way, probably going to be delivered soon, in the, any day now, if the baby hasn't already been born. And kind of got schwacked over a couple of weeks. There was a tornado, there was flooding, there's some snowing. His basement got flooded out. You know, he reached out to us and said, hey, you know, I don't like to ask. Of course, no one does, but if you can do anything. So within 24 hours, I mean, we worked with numerous organizations, reserve, Marine Reserve units in the area, and a few other organizations that do really great stuff, Team Rubicon. And they got out there to physically help him, you know, drain the spot, you know, pull the moldy carpets out, you know, this, that, and the other. And then now we're trying to work up a, you know, financial package to help offset some of his costs. So that's kind of in the emergency fund realm. We do other things. We do some outreach and mentorship. So an example that I will use is our Gold Star Family Retreat that we're doing here on Oahu, May 2nd through the 8th.
Oh, so you're in Hawaii, Jose?
I am, yes.
Very cool.
Yep. Yeah. I know it really sucks. It's not about the guy, and it's 80 degrees, and I'm about a mile from the beach.
Nice.
So, you know, this is a concept that my wife Charity and I came up on behalf of the foundation, you know, like a year ago. And this is kind of a pipe dream, right? We all know we have fallen friends and teammates, and some of us, you know, deal in different ways, you know, with that loss. You know, we know their families, we know their wives, we know their children. And so we had thought about, hey, why don't we try to see if we could put together something that would be kind of a, you know, all-inclusive, you know, a retreat. So this concept was, you know, kind of discussed, and you know, the foundation doesn't take no for an answer, and my wife and I certainly do not. So we took kind of a lead on this, and we said, well, let us look into the art of the possible. And, you know, for us, and I think you probably have some of the same, you know, knowing these families, it's sad because the truth of the matter is over the last 15 years, we've lost many teammates.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of these families, right, their son or dad or husband or brother is gone. And although there may have been a big rush at that time to support the family, you know, at some point over a decade and a half, you know, I don't want to say they're forgotten because they're not. I mean, we all are in touch. We talk all the time. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, those families have to deal with that every day. They literally wake up every morning. You know, one of the family members of one of our teammates told me, she says, you know, we're a strong Christian family. But sometimes my husband and I wake up every morning and we don't even know why we're still here. What's the point? You know? And so, you know, when you put that context and realize that that nightmare of losing a family member happens every day, every morning when you wake up, you know, the foundation thought the least we could do is reach out to some of the families. We only can do a certain number because of our accommodations, but we're going to do this every year. And say, hey, we haven't forgotten about your son, your dad, your brother, your husband will never be forgotten, and you will never be forgotten. So, you know, it was kind of interesting that we kind of started to do some exploration. What might be in the realm of the possible? And I will tell you that I am proud of my state. I literally was crushed with yes. I could only think of one or two organizations that declined to support. And so it really started off with the Paul Mitchell estate. You know, they have an incredible, probably $30 million, 3-acre estate on Lanikai Beach in Kailua. Lanikai Beach has historically been in the top five beaches of the world every year that they've been doing, you know, the beach ranking. And they have an incredible estate. And they immediately said, yes, yep. When do you want to do it? What do you want to do? So I'm like, okay, how about a 1 week every year? Yep. Tell us when. Wow. So, you know, this property, I mean, you know, 5-star in every way, you know, every movie star you can think of, you know, former presidents, stay at this estate when they're in Hawaii. And the Mitchell state said, yes, we will support them. And so when we were able to lock on the accommodations, okay, that's the biggest part. Where would we put 16 to 20 people? Okay, well now this is becoming reality. So we started to reach out, you know, to vendors, to companies, this and that. Can you provide this and that? I'll give you some examples. Paradise Helicopter, here in Hawaii. A lot of the leadership are Marines, retired and former, came out and said, yep, we're going to give you guys private helicopters to fly these families. You know, local businesses such as Restaurant 604, which is down on Pearl Harbor. Again, no military service, the owner, Donovan Maples and his wife, Davina. However, patriotic Americans are like, yeah, what can we do? They've helped us raise probably over the last year, I'm going to say maybe $50,000 or $60,000, something like that. Terrell Brand, a food company, HFM Foods, Tito's Vodka, the Chenin Marketing Group, Landmark Transport Services. I mean, I could go on and on and on. People just came in and said, hey, what can we do? How can we help? So since that time to raise money, we've had, you know, multiple fundraisers at some of the places I've talked about, like Restaurant 604. We've had a golf tournament put on by those same people that I'm referring to. And all of a sudden we're like, okay, well, we have the money to do this. So now what has become reality, and the families are going to be arriving, on the 2nd of May, we were able to go and outright buy, purchase, airline tickets to fly them. So that's all locked on. So when they come out here, they should expect, you know, a week, at that private resort, with a, private chef, and an open bar 24/7. You know, transportation, ground and private helicopter, you know, yoga every morning donated by 24-hour fitness, scuba lessons, fishing lessons. I mean, you name it. Even the military community here, it's been awesome. They've leaned in, the whole Pearl Harbor Pacific Fleet, which is the 4-star Navy command, leaned in, you know, here's the Admiral's barge. Go ahead and take the families on a private tour out of Pearl Harbor, the non-standard, you know, VIP sort of thing. The USS Missouri, the curator, yep, come up here. We're going to give you guys a curator-led private tour of the entire ship. Again, public doesn't normally get that. So that's the type of thing in this specific retreat. This is our first one that's going to take place. And we're really proud of that. But what I'm really excited about is when I first, you know, had the honor of reaching out to each one of these families, you know, imagine a family who lost, you know, a husband or a dad, you know, over a decade ago. And some guy calls you and says, I'm calling you on behalf of this foundation. This is who I am. I did know your husband or dad, or I didn't. Some of our teammates, families that are coming, I didn't know them. And I'm trying to explain to them, hey, this is what we would like to do for you. And wow. I mean, I had every response from, hey, go to hell. Why are you harassing us? You know, because the truth of the matter is some of these families get harassed. They're strange really? People out there, right?
Or even just like the amount of robocalls, and some of them sound legit. I remember I was out eating barbecue with my friend actually about a year ago, and he got duped. He was like, he went outside to take a call. And I'm like, what was that about? He's like, some free trip. It was probably like a free trip to Hawaii or something. I'm like, this is definitely bullshit. Hang up the phone. So I think people's automatic reaction to something like that, even hearing from you, if they don't know you, is, you know, this is some type of scam.
Sure. And, you know, and then on the other end of the spectrum, it was outright emotion. Like, you know, I'm not going to lie. I, you know, on each one of those six families that I called, I got emotional. I cried with the families because, you know, it's amazing. You know, we as Americans, right? These people are good salt of the earth Americans, right? They live in the Midwest, the Southeast. They're from the East Coast, the West Coast. They're just people trying to be good citizens, right? So, you know, I had families that literally broke down into tears, and like, you know, I'm on speakerphone talking to mom and maybe a daughter or something, and it was really emotional, man. You know, and I'm trying to keep my professionalism, and I'm trying to maintain, you know, my emotions, to be able to walk them through this. But, you know, since that introduction about, you know, that's probably 8 months ago now, you know, I correspond with the families at least weekly, some of them daily, you know, to keep them up to speed on behalf of the foundation. Here's what's going on. Here are things to consider. You know, here's what we've got planned for you. So we're excited. This is an inaugural event for us that we're going to be doing every year. And we would like to expand it a little bit, not so much in numbers, because, you know, maintaining positive control of 16 to 20 family members, you know, with a couple of, you know, my wife, myself, and a few teammates is enough. But we want to at some point bring in our traumatically injured Marines. And that includes Marines that don't have the physical injuries, right? What we all know intrinsically, but most average citizens don't, is, you know, traumatic injury can be brain injury, can be effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. So we want to start to bring in teammates and their families that are affected by those maladies as well. The truth is we didn't really know how to approach it, because some of the special needs for those folks, you know, we did, you know, this is the first time for us. We didn't really know what we might need to consider, whether it's an amputee or whether it's someone with severe PTSD. So we're kind of talking about, you know, our next iterations. We want to include them, and how would we go about doing it? What would we need that's kind of special to be able to support their needs? So again, that's an example of the kind of stuff that the foundation is doing for our Gold Star families and our fallen teammates.
How can
we've done? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, how can either, you know, former Marines out there or John Q. Public, how can they get involved in the foundation and the work you guys are doing?
Well, you know, that's a great question. What's really neat is I have been contacted personally, and I'm sure the foundation and other board members have. People say, hey, what can I do? How can I do it? I would say right up front that we have a online fundraising platform, both within our, you know, our social media Facebook page, as well as on our baseline foundation page. Someone can go there and you can click donate. When the donate page comes up, there's a drop-down menu. You can donate to an individual case. Can donate to the emergency fund. You can donate to the Gold Star families. So there are categories, and you can write a little narrative saying, hey, my friend is so-and-so, and he was recently injured in a training accident, or, you know, killed in action or whatever, and I want to donate to this to him, or it can go to the emergency fund. So right up front, I mean, the truth of the matter is that we, as a nonprofit, work on donations. I mean, if people are not involved, and financial and product donations are key, we simply cannot do the things that I've described to you today. That's just the truth. So if someone wants to help immediately, financial help is always welcome. Now, if someone wants to donate time, there are other things we do in the fundraising realm. You know, a guy might run the Marine Corps Marathon on behalf of the foundation and raise money. You know, some Marines may go and summit, you know, Mount Rainier for time and raise money. You know, those sort of activities. Someone may throw a golf tournament. And then within those, you know, people can volunteer to help execute those. So, for example, This year, November 8th, will be the third annual Eha Koa golf tournament here on Oahu. Huge golf tournament. I was involved last year for the first time on behalf of the foundation. I'm talking about, you know, probably two dozen businesses, 300 golfers, you know, just a huge venue, food, drink, entertainment. And then there's some golfing. It's a golf tournament, but it was more of the other than it was golfing, and all to raise money. And, you know, at the end of the night, you know, the foundation was awarded a very handsome check. If people want to come out and support that, really, it's just a fun day out there on the golf course, eating, drinking, entertainment, interacting with young reconnaissance Marines. They can come out and say, hey, I would like to help donate my time to organize, to pack, you know, to do this, that, and the other. So I think those are some ways that people can get involved in the foundation. And what I will tell you is in the end, the beauty of this foundation specifically is that every dollar that comes in, every product that comes in is directly in support of the foundation. It isn't like some, and I'm not going to mention them, where, you know, you get a dollar and 5 cents of that dollar goes to help the actual, you know, audience, the actual people you're supposed to support. No, no, none of us are getting paid. There's no, everything is about what we can do to further support in the recon community. So I can assure you personally, I'm saying it today on the air, that in my experience with the foundation, that has been the case. And while I'm on the board, that will continue to be the case.
That's awesome, man. Well, the website is reconfoundation.org. The Gold Star Retreat sounds amazing. I mean, it sounds like you're going to make these families feel like rock stars, and well-deserved. I guess last question I have before we wrap this up, and this has been a fascinating discussion, is where does the nickname Pep come from?
I'm often asked that. So my first name, right, being a Spaniard, first-generation American, is Jose, right? So Jose is basically Joseph in Spanish. So Pepe is sort of slang for Joe in Spanish. So when I grew up, literally nobody, not even my mother, called me Jose. It was always Pepe, which turned into Pep. Now, as I got older in my professional life, you know, when you meet someone, I don't introduce myself as Pep off the bat, unless like you're a teammate and people know me by that in the community, because I would go, hi, my name is Pep. And they would say, what, Pat? No, Pep. What? Perp? No, just never mind. Never mind. Joe. How about Joe? Joe works, because that's kind of a common name. So it's a funny story. It's funny you asked me that. I was literally just asked that day before yesterday. So that's the background of that.
That's cool, man. Now, I was just wondering. So once again, the website is reconfoundation.org. It's been great having someone of your background, because as you said, a lot of guys in your background don't really do a lot of speaking, not a lot of books put out by guys of your background. And it's been great having you on. And anything else to plug before we wrap this up?
Mm-hmm. I would just say that I appreciate having the opportunity to represent the Marine Reconnaissance Foundation and the reconnaissance community, which is our reconnaissance Marines and our Special Amphibious Reconnaissance Corpsmen. Lucky to be an American, as we all are, and we believe in our mission. And if you're like-minded and you'd like to be involved, please get involved, because action speaks louder than words.
Awesome.
That's all I have. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you so much for spending some of your day with us today. This has been really informative, and I think a lot of people are going to want to get involved.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much.
Great having Jose Pep de Blada on the show today. And thanks to Nick Kaufman for the connection. And especially for a guy who sounded like he didn't want to talk so much about himself, I'm very glad that he did get into his background.
No, he seems like a really cool guy.
Yeah. And at first, you know, because he was just like, well, I just want to talk about the Recon Foundation. I thought he was going to be kind of tight-lipped about his service. And I'm glad he got into it with us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you want the thing is, we live in a democratic country, right? And we need the public support for our military. And if the public doesn't know what a reconnaissance Marine is, they're not going to support him.
Yeah.
That's just the truth. I mean, if they don't know what a Ranger is, they're not going to support him.
I think it's basically a Navy SEAL.
I think the public understands what a Navy SEAL is at this point. But no, as Jose was talking about, I mean, it's important to talk about the reconnaissance Marine because we want the public to support them. We want the public to support the Marine Corps. We want the public to support foundations like this that help out the families and injured Marines. So it is important to tell some of these stories.
Yeah, and I do appreciate him going into, you know, extensive detail about their mission and that everybody is a volunteer. You know, oftentimes you do hear about organizations and it just seems like they're doing a lot of like networking and charity events and you wonder where the money is going. You know, he gave us all the details of where that money is going. So it sounds like an incredible organization.
Yeah, no, they sound like they're really hands-on, which is great. Like I have a friend, without naming names, but doing it was like one of these charitable galas down in downtown Manhattan. And like these millionaires were coming up to him and they're like, yeah, I just donated $1.5 million to the organization. But then on the backside of it, he knows that organization isn't doing anything.
Yeah.
So he's like, where the fuck is the money going? What the hell is going on here?
It's true.
So
I've seen the same type of thing, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like the Recon Foundation is small. It's staffed by volunteers and it sounds like it's hands on, you know, so it's probably a much safer bet.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's definitely passionate about it. Yeah. And I think being able to fly these Gold Star families out to Hawaii for, you know, a few days to both unwind and learn some new stuff, like it sounds really like cool. An awesome experience. And also the reaction he got from those families. So, yeah, visit reconfoundation.org. And I think that's it for us. I mean, that was a great interview. And for a guy who doesn't do a lot of media, I thought he was excellent.
Yeah,
and had a lot to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to have him back on sometime.
Definitely. All right, so follow us, as always, at SOPREP Radio. Check out thenewsrep.com for all the latest in special operations news, as well as everything else we're covering over there. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
You've been listening to SOPREP Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at SOPREP Radio.